Land Podcast with David Amoyal.
Benvenuti, as we would say in Italy. Welcome to all of you that don't speak Italian. Thank you so much for joining us for the second episode of the week of the Calcio Land podcast. So today we're going to talk a lot about transfers. The transfer gods have been good to us with some recent updates. So we'll talk about Werner, Dembele, Bennacer, Tonali. There's been some developments there. We are going to talk about Lazio at the end of the podcast. We are going to try to focus again on the big teams in Serie A with games expected to come back fairly soon. And I stress the word expected, but we are going to cover the team. So we decided to start with Lazio with our friend Sean McIntosh. But before we get to all that, I'm joined by our dear friend, producer, co-host of the show, Alex Goldberg. So Alex, before we get to Werner, who is on the verge of joining Chelsea, I want to ask you about another player, because earlier this week there was some buzz a little bit about Dembele to Juve. I know he's also been linked to Liverpool, which is also interesting now in light of the Werner news. So let me ask you, regardless of Chelsea, because now it seems your front line is looking rather good, would you recommend the club go after Dembele?
I'm the worst person to ask about Ousmane Dembele because I have a irrational love for him. I am one of his fanboys, and I'm willing to turn a blind eye to the unprofessionalism, all of the injuries, and just focus on the insane talent and the fact that he's still just 23 years old. So this is a great representation of when Alex Goldberg should not be in charge of a club, because I would. I'd be interested in him. But to answer it a little bit more seriously and to give you a little bit more objective of a take, I guess you should look at Ousmane Dembele if you feel like you already have players in his position or attackers that you can depend on, and where then Ousmane Dembele is more somebody that, hey, if he continues to be unprofessional, if he continues to get injured, well, at the most, you just lost the money you spent on him, which nowadays is nothing compared to what you would have had to spend on him a year or two ago. So you lose the money, but he doesn't really impact your team. Him not playing well isn't the reason why your team didn't do well. So you got to have kind of an established dressing room. But beyond dressing room, you have to have an established team. You have to have players that can go out and win you games that are not named Ousmane Dembele. But it is, in a way, low risk, high reward, because, all right, I guess the risk is wasting the money. And it's not peanuts that he's available for now, but comparatively, it kind of is. And when you look at the talent he has, the money is probably on the underside. When you just look at the talent he has, he should be worth a lot more. But obviously, everybody knows about the unprofessionalism and the injuries. So I still say low risk, high reward, though, because besides the money, the reward could be magnificent. What about if all of a sudden he gets it together? What about if the immaturity these last few years has been just being young? And what about if he's learned from it? What about if he has a chip on his shoulder? What about if he wants to prove to people that he's not some washed-up prodigy and he actually is going to make good on his name? What about if the injuries were just kind of a snowball effect, but now all of a sudden they've stopped? We've seen that with players. I mean, hell, Chelsea have one in Ross Barkley. Injury, 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 and boom. Kind of hit his mid-20s, and Dembele's getting close to there, and his body just became a lot more durable, and he learned about his body. Hopefully, Dembele's learning about his body, learning about his hamstring. The reward could be phenomenal. And if you have, like I said, an established team and established attackers, wingers you can depend on, best case scenario is that they play well, but Dembele gets his stuff together and he forces them out, or he competes with them, or he shows to the rest of the team that, hey, I got just as much talent as all of you and I'm going to act on it. So I don't think, David, a team should be looking at him if they're really going to put a lot of dependence on him being there. He's not a player you can depend on right now. But if you feel like you have the room squad-wise and financially that you want to take a little bit of a risk on him, ooh, the reward could be special. I don't think anybody, if they're in the situation to do it, should sneeze at that type of talent and taking on that type of talent. So as I said, I have an irrational love for him. I'd probably do it no matter what my team looked like. But objectively, I think you already have to have players that you can depend on before bringing him in. And then it really is kind of a low risk, high reward type deal. So that's my answer, David. Now kind of getting to more the news side of things. Is there anything to the links to Juve?
Yeah, so those came out from Spain earlier this week. And keep in mind, this is really kind of in the context of the Pjanic to Barcelona deal. But Di Marzio, you know, had a post basically saying there's really nothing to this report on Dembélé to Juve. He's determined to really prove himself at Barca. But I have to say, he would have been really intriguing in Serie A. He really feels like a type of player that could really check all the boxes to do well in Serie A. There doesn't seem, though, to be much there. I will say on the Dembélé side of things, I'd be curious to see if Liverpool ups the ante to go after him now that Werner's on his way to joining Chelsea. He's Chelsea's player to lose. So I'd be curious if that changes, and also if Dembélé's opinion of wanting to stay at Barcelona changes if Liverpool, you know, maybe now has more of an urgency to sign him. The one player that Juve really wants in the deal for Pjanic is Arthur, but that feels still a very difficult deal to complete. Doesn't seem the player is really keen to leaving Barcelona, kind of same as Dembélé. I know there had been some reports in Italy that there was an opening of him being more willing to join Juve, but that does not seem to be the case. So I don't think we'll see Dembélé in Serie A. I think Pjanic at Barcelona, you know, that's definitely still on the table, but getting Arthur for Juve will still be tough. But Alex, now let's, before we get to the hot transfer topics related to Serie A, I have to ask you on this news about Werner. We've seen Chelsea for the second time in a row come out of nowhere and swoop in. We haven't gotten that, but by the time we're recording this Friday morning, we don't yet have a here we go from Fabrizio, but it certainly looks really, really promising. So let me ask you two things. A, how excited are you? And B, you know I like Tammy Abraham quite a bit. Do you think this impacts him a lot, or do you think we shouldn't look at this as a threat too much to Tammy?
Yeah, on the first part of that, I mean, I'm very excited. I'm very excited because obviously Timo Werner is an exciting player, just 24 years old. He's somebody that a lot of teams were at least in for. We can debate the word want when we talk about Liverpool and how they seem to have had their limits and how they would approach him. But nonetheless, this is a really nice talent who is just 24 years old, and he brings goals, and that's something that Chelsea needs. So I'm very excited, and I'm also very excited, David, because you don't have to be a Chelsea fan to kind of get the vibe that maybe things are changing. Maybe Roman Abramovich is a little bit more back in the fold. Maybe things are now different under Frank Lampard as opposed to how they were under Conte and Sarri. This is just simply a signing that you weren't really seeing under Conte or Sarri, and you haven't really seen this type of movement, this type of activity, this type of decisiveness from Chelsea in a long time. It reminds me of when they signed Diego Costa and Cesc Fabregas, now it is a little while ago, but in Mourinho's second stint with Chelsea, where they got their business done early, quick, and it was damn good business. It really was. So I'm very excited because it really does feel like kind of a new era starting. Now, on the position thing, yep, you're a fan of Tammy Abraham, so am I. I don't think it impacts him too much. Timo Werner can play left wing. He certainly can play striker as well. From what I've heard, they envision him as a left winger, Timo Werner, just as much as a striker. Because if you watch him for Leipzig, they kind of play two strikers up front, but Timo Werner's always on that left-hand side. And I know you should never go off YouTube highlights. I've watched plenty of Werner in game and on Y Scout, which is good and bad highlights. But if you just watch enough Timo Werner highlights, he's operating from the left side, usually the left wing, quite a lot. So I see him as a left wing, maybe more so than at striker, but he's an option at striker. It does make things interesting, David, with the whole Tammy Abraham contract talks. I don't think this means that Tammy's going to be pissed. I don't think this means now all of a sudden there's going to be turmoil between Tammy and Chelsea, But it certainly is just a new factor that probably is thrown into these negotiations some way, somehow, because I do imagine you'll see Timo Werner be a left winger, but also the backup striker to Tammy Abraham, because now the whole Giroud thing actually kind of makes sense. Now Chelsea will not be acquiring another outright striker, but Giroud is almost that 2.5 or third string striker, meaning if Werner's playing left wing, well, technically Giroud's backup to Tammy, but if Werner's also playing striker, well, then Giroud's third string. We'll see if Giroud likes that. As you know, David, him signing that one-year extension, sure, keeps him at Chelsea. He spoke on it, especially with the pandemic. It was a lot easier just to kind of keep his family in London. But you also know it doesn't 1,000% mean he's staying at Chelsea for next season. So we'll see what happens. It's going to be very interesting. But I don't think this is like an insulting move to Tammy. I think this is an ambitious move from
just
Chelsea.
Just quickly on Giroud, Lazio sporting director Tare had a really good interview echoing kind of what you said, that he knew ultimately he was going to stay in London. And this was even before the pandemic, that he noticed how much he liked it in London. So that's interesting. But he wasn't shy about saying how much he likes and respects Giroud. So you never know. We might see Lazio trying to make another move there. But definitely very exciting for Chelsea. And good for you, Amina. It's always great when you have something that helps your content. So really good stuff.
Yeah. So we'll be following that to see if it gets official in the next few days. It certainly seems like it is Chelsea's to completely finalize. But as you know, me being a passionate fan and me really wanting to banter rival teams, I won't fully do that until I see Chelsea announce it. But exciting times for me. And let's take the attention off of me. And now let's move to hot transfer topics, David. Let's start with this. Is it true Bennacer has a 50 million euro exit clause? And is there any reason why Milan should allow him to leave?
Yeah, so this is a very interesting scenario. And first off, I know I also received a question kind of related to this by one of our listeners, Massimo Scipani. So I'm kind of going to address your question here as well. So number one, there is a 50 million exit clause for Bennacer. As far as I know, it's only can only be used abroad, so it's not for another Serie A club available. And look, Bennacer, he arrived at Milan, he had just won the prize for a best player at the Africa Cup tournament. I think he's had a successful first season at Milan. He's done really well. If you looked at Milan's squad and you say, you look at the age, the upside, and you're like, okay, if we are looking to build the Milan of the future, you would say Bennacer is absolutely a building block. You would say Donnarumma, you would say Romagnoli, you would say Theo Hernandez, you would say, okay, these are four players that are definitely good enough to be starters on a team competing for a Champions League spot, at least, right? So on one hand, you could say, well, what would be the point of selling? You don't have that many building blocks. You have to hold on to the one you have. And that makes a lot of sense if you think of it. But we also have to account for the fact that Milan is really in very tough financial shape. This was before the pandemic. That certainly hasn't helped it. So it becomes very hard for Milan to pass up on an opportunity to make a big plusvalenza. And of all the top teams in Serie A, I would say Milan's the one that hasn't done the best job of making money off plusvalenza. So, you know, it becomes hard to say no. They got Bennacer for cheap. I calculated at 50 million, you would make a plusvalenza of around 35 million euro, which is really, really significant. So there's that aspect. And also, you know, think about it, with Milan not in the Champions League, as much as Bennacer likes it there and he's been sending, you know, tweets with the colors, I get all that. Let's not think so much Bennacer, but in general, you have a young player comes to Milan, does really well, but they're not in the Champions League. And he has a big club, let's say PSG. I've also seen some places link Bennacer to Man United. That I can't say. PSG, though, legitimately interested in him. If you're Bennacer and you're like, hey, I can go to these clubs, make more money, be in the Champions League, That's got to be attractive. So Milan, unfortunately, in a lot of ways, and I know this is hard, especially what we'll get to in a second, what's going on at Inter, that maybe you have to start looking at it. Okay, even if we hit a home run on a player like Bennacer and Theo Hernandez, if we can turn around and make a big profit and then find their replacement, another young player, build him up, and then maybe keep that player long term, you are also, you know, bringing relief to your balance sheet. So I know this is not the type of thing Milan fans want to hear, but realistically, especially if Donnarumma decides to sign an extension, which seems likely, as we heard from our friend Ale Iagobone, you got to think there's going to be one player that needs to be sacrificed for a big plusvalenza. So that's the thing on Bennacer. What we do know for sure is he does have that 50 million euro exit clause. I can't confirm the Man United links, but I definitely could see PSG going after him.
All right, David. Well, this is very exciting, potentially, for Inter fans. Could they really sign both Kumbula and Tonali?
I saw you like this one, Alex. Like, I posted the article about this, and you were like, oh, this is a nice power play from Inter, and I agree. And look, I get it for Milan fans, where we're talking here about the exact opposite of the spectrum. So look at it, too, as maybe a sign of hope. Look, Inter was, in some ways, not maybe quite as bad, but really in very tough financial shape for a while, had a lot of tough financial fair play restrictions. You know, weren't able to attract a lot of great players. And look at Inter now, and Tonali especially, man, there's a lot of momentum for Tonali to Inter. Definitely not to the level, as we're recording this, as Werner to Chelsea. That definitely seems more advanced. But Tonali to Inter is definitely getting closer. And I will say this, the fact that Tonali wants to join Inter, to me, really says a lot. I think it's safe to say, regardless of if they get Tonali over the finish line or not, what we can say is that Inter is once again a destination club. And we have a lot of examples of this. We have Godin signed with them on Bosman. And yeah, I know he was older, maybe didn't fully live up to expectations, but that's a big name. He had a lot of suitors. We had Eriksen, who, because he had an expiring contract, had a ton of leverage in picking his next team. So he wasn't exactly a Bosman signing, but close to it. So we have Eriksen pick Inter. We had Barella, who we know is a big Inter fan, but regardless of that, really wanted to play for Conte and go there. So he pushed to go there. And then now we have Tonali saying, yeah, I want to go to Inter. And interestingly, you could say he has a much better chance to play regularly at Juve. So by adding Tonali, look at the mix Inter has as a midfield. You know, you're looking at Brozovic, who I think the world of, and I still think Brozovic is the best out of all the midfielders on Inter. We've added Eriksen, have Barella, we have Sensi, and now we could potentially have Tonali. And now that sounds like a lot of midfielders for sure, but A, keep in mind Sensi is pretty fragile, and I always go back to that game that Juve won at San Siro, where once Sensi came out with an injury and then Juve could bring in their bench changed the game. It was just vastly superior to Inter. So Inter needs to bring up their depth. You give Conte all those players in the midfield. I'm not saying they're the quality of Vidal, Pirlo, Marchisio, Pogba. That's not what I'm saying. But you're giving him a lot of ingredients to kind of try to create a unit that's pretty similar there. So looks promising on Tonali, same with Kumbula. There, though, to me, what's interesting is I would take it as a sign that Godin is leaving. I don't think that means Skriniar is leaving. But, you know, what happens to Bastoni there? But again, we go back to the fact that Inter needs depth, and all of a sudden you are looking at a really nice squad. Now, I will say this, and some Inter fans have pointed this out, and I think this is a very valid point. As exciting as it would be if they land both Kumbula and Tonali, they do not address Inter's weakness. And I think if you looked at their squad, the one place where Juve is definitely better than them is the wingers, and the wing backs specifically, Cuadrado, Alexandro, definitely better than what Inter has. So it doesn't address that, but Inter definitely, and I think you put it well, Alex, that would be a very nice power play to land two young players that have done exceptionally well their first season in Serie A. I'm not someone who gets really excited by prospects, but these two are legit. And these guys could be really, really good players for Inter for 10 years. So if they can get both done, even if it doesn't address the main weakness of the squad, that would be a really nice power play.
Yeah, that's the thing, is they're not just two youngsters who you really have to project a lot on. You can still, and that's a bonus. But they're already players who have shown you they can help you now and certainly in the future. And that's why it's just so exciting. And boy, I can tell you, Antonio Conte didn't get backed like this at Chelsea. That's for damn sure.
Well, I'll tell you one thing. This will not prevent Conte from finding reasons to complain. I know that the man will find a way to complain no matter what happens. I'd be very curious for the next podcast. I'm going to try to come up with something that Conte could complain about with this midfield. Let's leave it up to him. He is the master of this. I have no doubt. Just like with Eriksen, he did find a way to complain about it. And also the other underrated aspect of Tonali to Inter, if it happens, man, that would be a blow to Juve and Juve fans. That's for sure. And that can't be underestimated. I always think that, in a way, is always an intriguing aspect of transfers.
Well, David, Conte could get messy now, and Conte would say, well, I never got messy in his 20s, so this is bullshit. So, I mean, that's pretty much what would happen. I got the washed-up version of messy. All right, let's move on to the last hot transfer topic, and it's an even more interesting one now, or maybe less. Is there anything concrete to Bernardeschi to Chelsea?
Yeah, no, actually, I'm with you. It's probably the latter, less, because you and I have been chatting about this. And I know there were some reports. And this goes back to, you know, Jorginho to Juve, which now, with Tonali closer to Inter, someone asked me, hey, you know, does this make Jorginho to Juve more likely? And part of me wants to say yes, but that's contingent on Chelsea wanting to agree to take a player back in a swap, because I'd be very surprised if Juve made a big cash offer for Jorginho, which I'm sure is what Chelsea wants. There's nothing concrete on Bernardeschi to Chelsea. I think he is one of those players that you're like, okay, maybe Chelsea would be interested in him. Kind of the profile up. I mean, he is someone who does play regularly for Italy, had a disappointing season, no doubt, but I don't think there's much appetite at Chelsea, especially after this deal for Werner. So, I think if Tonali goes to Inter, would Juve intensify their pursuit of Jorginho? Probably. But the key there would be finding a player that Chelsea would be interested in a swap. But as of now, there's nothing on Bernardeschi, but it seems almost certain that Bernardeschi will leave Juve. So great stuff on the hot transfer topics. Before we get to Sean McIntosh to chat about Lazio, we are going to do a segment for our patrons. I want to thank our patrons. Great support in the past 3 months. We've been able to pay over $1,000 to freelance writers who had lost their gigs. It's been a great program. We've had awesome articles on Calcioland. All the money that we raised on Patreon was used to pay these writers. With the leagues coming back, we are going to phase out a little bit the program. We will still keep on some of the writers. They might not be writing as often, but we are back to supporting the Insuperabile, which is a great nonprofit in Italy that runs football academy for children. So if you like Calcioland, consider becoming a patron. You'll get longer versions of the pod. You'll get all your questions answered, and you'll be helping some good causes. So I'm very excited to be joined by my good friend Sean McIntosh to talk about Lazio. We've been going a lot to Italy. Most of our guests recently have all been based in Italy. I figured today we'd switch it up and go to Las Vegas, where Sean is based. Sean does a fantastic job running fan clubs for Lazio. Used to do it when he was based in Texas. Now he's doing it in Vegas. And Sean is also the director of ticket sales for the Las Vegas Aces, which is the female professional basketball team in Vegas. So I figured we'd also talk a little bit about the sports industry at the back, because Sean and I, once in a while, like, we exchange messages, and I always like to get his thoughts on that. So Sean, as always, it's wonderful talking to you, my friend. Bentornato to Calcioland.
Grazie, David. Always a pleasure to be on.
Okay, so let's talk about Serie A and Lazio coming back. And first off, let me apologize. Serie A might not be back, but my jinxing powers are. I was rocking a Milinkovic-Savic jersey on Tuesday on a day off. This morning we heard he got injured in practice, but it doesn't sound like it's bad. As a matter of fact, they canceled the MRI. But let me apologize for my jinxing powers. But I want to ask you, with the season coming back, you know, one thing that stood out to me, Sean, is before the break, you know, once these things started happening with games having to be rescheduled and whatnot, Lazio was in a position where they'd have to play very few games over a ton of days. They were out of the Europa League, outside of Serie A, and now it's completely flipped. If you look at the Serie A schedule, now we are seeing a lot of games in a week. So let me ask you, how much does this change things for Lazio?
Yeah, it does. Look, Lazio went from playing one match a week to now having to play every 3 days. So I don't want to call it a disadvantage. We certainly lost the advantage we had, right? We had an advantage.
Yep.
You've got Juve, Inter. They had to play European matches. They're still in Coppa Italia. So certainly it was an advantage. Now we've lost that advantage. I don't think we are at a disadvantage. We've got a strong squad. I think it's a level playing field for everybody. Juve and Inter still have Coppa Italia matches. We'll see what any sort of European play looks like. So they'll certainly still be focusing some on that. And certainly squads with depth are going to be best served by this new development. But when it comes to trusting depth, look, I do think Lazio can be underrated in that department. Bernardeschi is Juve's most capped player off the bench. I'm not sure that he, at this moment in time, elicits a ton of confidence. Lazio's seen production from guys like Caicedo and Cataldi off the bench. So I also have been in the boat, and I've told others the same thing, that at least for myself, I throw everything out the window. Everything that we saw, you can make predictions, we can talk about it, but this is a whole new season. So the form that somebody was in prior, I don't know if we're going to see that. This has been an off season, and I certainly, as a Lazio fan, I hope we can return to some semblance of form we saw, but this is a whole new season.
Yeah, no, I think you put it very well. I like that it's more of you lost the advantage. I think that's actually a more constructive way of looking at it. And as you mentioned, Juve and Inter have the Coppa Italia, which is a good point. So obviously they're going to be playing a lot more games. I have to say, Lazio, you know, their core players this season have really been carrying them in a lot of ways. They haven't really suffered significant injuries, but now things are going to start changing because, as we mentioned, they're going to be playing essentially every three games. So tell me, in your opinions, in order for Lazio to go all the way or challenge until the very end, which backup players, in your opinion, have to really step up?
Yeah, rotation's going to be huge. I mentioned Caicedo already, and he's been absolutely instrumental off the bench. I mean, he's second in the squad in goals. He's got goals already. I believe, you know, he's certainly going to be called heavily to both spell Ciro Immobile and to play alongside him. I also look at the likes of Lucas Leiva and Lulic. Both of those guys are coming off of injuries.
Yeah.
So if Lazio is going to make a run, they are going to need production from the likes of Gioni, Cataldi, and Parolo. Those guys are going to have to come in and play really, really well. And then I look at a guy like Patrick. Patrick's versatility is going to come in absolutely handy for them. You're going to see him playing at center back. You're going to see him playing at that right wing back to spell Lobsdottir. So I think those guys are going to be crucial. And, you know, I know oftentimes our strength has been in our continuity, but moving forward, we're going to have to see a lot more rotation with so many games.
Okay. Yeah, definitely. So if you had to guess from whenever we start playing until the end of the season, who do you think is going to score more goals between Caicedo and Correa?
I believe that Correa is going to continue to wreak havoc on defenders. A lot of times the chaos that he creates leads to opportunities for others. He's certainly been a lot more adept at scoring and finishing this year than years prior. He still has a little bit of a, I would like to see him finish a little bit stronger. So I'm going to say Caicedo. I see him as scoring more goals just because he's already done it. And I do believe he's going to benefit most from this schedule with an increased role, more playing time, knowing that defenders are always going to key in on Immobile when both of those guys are on the field together. And if he's not on the field with Immobile, he's going to be on the field with a Luis Alberto or Correa. So those guys are always going to get the attention, which leaves the door open for Caicedo to eat. And he's going to eat well. I believe he's shown his goal-scoring prowess. I think it's going to continue. And obviously, he's become a fan favorite this season. So I'm certainly looking forward to that.
Okay. Yeah, I like both players quite a bit, for sure. So obviously, if the format is, as we discussed, where they're getting all these games in within 3 days, I think it's safe to say for the Scudetto, it really comes down to Juve and Lazio. I mean, I guess Inter could make a comeback, but, you know, that'd be pretty tough. But if we go to the playoff format, and look, Serie A has changed a lot, what they're going to do or not. It seems the playoff format is going to happen if a player tests positive before the game start, and, you know, they kind of have to scrape that plan. But let me ask you, in a playoff scenario, which team would you rather not face between Juve and, I'm going to take Atalanta as the Cinderella team no one would want to play in a playoff? Which of these two teams would you be more scared in just one game?
Yeah, so I was going to say it really depends on the format. So if it's a one-game series, if it's a single elimination, I'm actually going to go with Atalanta. They're capable of beating anyone on their day. Certainly a fast-paced team, likes to score, likes to take chances. I think that benefits them in any sort of a single game situation. Look, at the end of the day, no disrespect, Juve is Juve. So, but if it is a home and away aggregate, be a little bit more concerned with Juve. I believe they probably have, you know, ton of experience, ton of depth, where I could see that playing a bigger factor in a two game stance. But look, my stance, just so we're clear on playoffs, is that any format that gives clubs that are 15 or 18 points back from the top spot a chance at the Scudetto, it's bullcrap, right? Like, to me, that takes away the integrity of the competition and the games that have already proceeded. Obviously, there's a ton of opinions out there on what can and should be done. I at the end of the day, if we're playing in a world where, you know, we all believe that they're a Serie A season's not going to continue, right? If they can't split because of one test that's positive, then in all likelihood, it's going to come down to whatever the options are. And if it's playoffs, I'd certainly like to see a match against Juve. That's it. To me, these clubs at this point have earned that. But yeah, if it's between Juve and Atalanta in a single game, I'd rather face Juve. Lazio's history, especially this season, has shown we are capable of beating them.
Yeah, no, I'm with you. And look, in general, I certainly agree with you. I mean, I have huge reservations on if these games are even going to take place at all. I mean, my only comment on what you said, because in general, I do agree, is that in a lot of ways, this season, compromised, I don't know if it's the right word, but no matter what happens, the season was likely going to have a different outcome than if we just played. But I think, you know, giving a chance to a team that was really, really far behind and then they have a Scudetto, yeah, I'd be with you. That would be really one bridge too far. But as you mentioned, you know, Lazio has done well against Juve, especially this season, but even before, they've always been tough with Juve. What specifically about the matchup do you think favors Lazio? They really do as well as anyone against Juve.
Yeah, look, it's confidence and concentration, and the confidence comes from the results, right? Like you said, even outside of this year, you know, Lazio had beaten Juve and had beaten Juve at their stadium and in a Supercoppa, and that bred confidence. And as far as concentration, look, Lazio knows it takes a game plan and it takes focus to beat Juve. They play up to their competition, and they certainly put a lot of attention on that matchup. Recently, Simone Inzaghi, he's out-coached Sadi, plain and simple.
Yeah.
He's shown confidence in his own lineup versus Sadi, who's had to make adjustments leading into matches against Lazio. We've been able to beat them pretty handedly, which, again, goes to my point. It bred confidence, so we knew we could do it again. And plain and simple, Lazio was just on a run of tremendous form. I want to say we were the best team in Serie A during that run. So it didn't necessarily matter who we were playing. I just thought that we were in this form. We'll see if we can return to that. But, you know, against Juve specifically, I mean, there was just this level of confidence and concentration, the tactics that Simone put in place. And at the end of the day, I think a lot of our players were just better. Our midfield was a better midfield than what Juve would provide. So, we'll see if we can continue that.
Okay. Yeah, well said. I agree with you there. So now let's look a little bit beyond this current season. Let's look a little bit more to the summer. Obviously, Lazio has a really, really good squad. I'm going to ask you this question with the caveat that you don't have to replace any of your core players, because I actually think there really is a lot of momentum for Lazio bringing back the whole gang back next season. I think, too, especially with how this season ends, if Lazio were in a win, you know, and whatever decision is made, I have a feeling there would be a lot of desire, even within the players, to come back and try to do it one more. So I'm going to give you the caveat that you don't have to replace Milinkovic-Savic, you don't have to replace Immobile, any of the key players, but if you could zero in on two positions that you'd like to see Lazio target this summer, what would they be?
Yeah, so I'm glad you brought it up, because not only are the players, you know, hopefully coming back to give it another go to potentially fight for a Scudetto, either that they didn't win or to run it back, but you know, this group that's been together for a few years now still, you know, certainly has to continue to hopefully fight for Champions League, but, you know, most of them want to reap that reward and actually play together in Champions League, because that's been the goal. In order for us to compete in Champions League, again, knock on wood that we do qualify, we're going to have to fill our left wing back position and then another striker. Lulic isn't getting any younger. I'm not sure if Joni is that Champions League quality for us. Laziali have spoken about it for years, but we need a Vice Immobile. We need somebody that's going to give him a break. As great as Caicedo has been off the bench, he's a very different player. We need somebody that's another strong striker of similar qualities to Chido. I just don't see us relying on him at the level that we've had to rely on him if we intend to actually compete in Champions League. So left wing back, somebody to replace Lulic, and then somebody to spell Chido. Obviously, in order for us to have a successful, what I would deem as successful, there are other positions too, but I think those are the two most important.
Yeah, no, I definitely agree with you there. So, Sean, I wanted to talk a little bit about this, because you and I had a brief exchange via message a while back. I think this was during the time about the lawsuit for the U.S. women's team, but that really wasn't the point. I mean, we were just talking in general about the sports business. So, you know, one thing that stands out to me is, you know, you are in charge of ticket sales for a professional basketball team here in the U.S. in Vegas. It's a big deal. You also, and you used to work in MLS in a similar capacity. So I wanted to talk to you a little bit about this, you know, because when I hear a lot of people talking about the pandemic and leagues trying to come back, I very often hear, oh, this is all about money, which, look, it is at the end of the day. But I think we all too often think about the millionaire players, about the clubs with huge revenues, the whole TV deals. But, you know, at the end of the day, sports employs so many people at so many levels, like people make a living off it. So tell us a little bit from your perspective, you know, because this impacts you directly and, you know, you're a friend of mine and I wish you all the best. But tell me a little bit, maybe what the fan who just looks at the millionaire players, give them maybe more of a perspective on the impact the pandemic has had on the sports industry, on people who don't make millions of dollars a year. And if you do, God bless you, by the way.
Yeah, I'm glad you bring this up because, to your point, right, I'll hear about the owners, the players, the competition format. That's all the sexy stuff. But every area of the business has been impacted. Going to talk about three things: ticket sales, sponsorships, and venues. So on ticket sales, massive trickle-down effect here. Most leagues, most teams see anywhere from 40 to 60% of their revenues attributed to ticket sales. And teams are now having to obviously refund ticket holders for any canceled games or games that are now being played without fans, which obviously makes complete sense. And it's the right thing to do. But not only are teams taking a hit on that lost revenue, which it's pretty easy to understand, but they're actually taking a hit on the commissions that they paid out to their ticket sales executives on those said tickets. So again, talk about a trickle-down effect. What happens to the commission that was already paid out? You know, are these executives being asked to come out of pocket to pay with no games on the horizon that look like they'll include any fans? The opportunity to sell tickets is gone. So not only is there an opportunity for a club to generate revenue impacted, but again, I'm just looking at the people. Those ticket sales executives now don't have an opportunity to reap their rewards and to earn a living. Most of these people have been impacted in terms of furloughs. So anybody that's been lucky enough to keep their jobs, especially on the ticket sales side, they've seen a massive hit to their income. You know, a ticket sales commission can often account for anywhere from 50 to 70% of a ticket sales executive's compensation. And we're not talking about people that are making millions. These folks have very low base salaries. So they are dependent upon that commission. So right off the bat, it's an area of the business where you see people directly being impacted and suffering. So that's always tough. On sponsorship, without fans in the buildings, teams have had to scramble to find new and creative ways to activate their sponsorships. Most sponsors are tracking impressions and eyeballs on their brands, and that typically takes place either on television or in venue and in the stadiums. Well, a lot of these deals that have already been crafted, approved, signed off on, right, they took time, hours of laboring by legal teams. Now all these teams have to go back, essentially rip up those contracts and find new ways to activate their sponsors in an effort to keep them on board because they've already lost that ticket sales revenue. They can't afford to now lose sponsors. With more games actually being nationally televised, that's a positive for the leagues. Certainly, but it can actually pose a challenge for some of the teams because nationally televised games, a team typically doesn't have as much say over those assets that you see on TV. This means that teams have to get a lot more creative to fulfill their obligations to a sponsor. So anytime a team takes a loss on revenue now when it comes to sponsorship, it's felt a lot harder. it's causing people to lose their jobs. So right now it's imperative that teams find ways to keep sponsorship revenue, knowing that ticket sales, at least in the short term, isn't going to be driven. And then lastly, you've got venue spaces, which is really, really tricky. Concerts, yeah. Shows, conferences, you name it. Those are typically booked years in advance.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Those also drive revenue for teams, as they typically strive to keep the lights on in their stadiums all year long. So,
yeah.
You know, if you're talking about an NBA team, typically they'll play with regular season and preseason, 40 some odd games. Then you got playoffs. So, you know, if you're looking at an NFL to an NBA team, that's 20 to 50 times a year that they're occupying their venues. That's a lot of time and a lot of space and dates that typically need to be filled. And those are filled with concerts, shows, yeah. conferences. But now that everything is starting to open up a little bit, you see some sporting events happening. Obviously, as soon as everybody feels safe and comfortable, whether it's a vaccine that's out there, everybody's going to be rushing back at the same time. It's going to create an insane puzzle piece for these venues trying to fit all of these rescheduled events. Mind you, there are events that still haven't been canceled that are still on the books for 2021 or 2022. So now trying to fill these airtight schedules with sporting events or other conferences that are filled, there's not going to be enough dates for everyone, and there's going to be a lot of people that lose out. So any canceled shows, conferences, concerts, that just leads to more lost revenue, which, again, the trickle-down effect is that it will displace not only events, but potentially a lot more jobs. So certainly a lot more challenges out there, but those are some of the biggest ones that I'm directly involved in and see. So best case scenario is obviously things start clearing up sooner than later. But yeah, it's certainly a challenging time for the sports industry.
Well, Sean, I think you gave us such a really good answer and insight. I really appreciate you sharing that. I know things are starting to get slowly back to normal in Vegas, so we wish you the best. And we also hope you guys can, you know, safely get back together to watch your favorite team together. So, Sean, thank you so much for coming on. Always wonderful chatting with you. I look forward to having you back on later this summer.
Thanks, David. Appreciate it.